this episode of Sanity Lounge, we have Ricky Wise in the studio. Ricky is a dynamic multi-instrumentalist, singer, and a passionate drummer. Ricky has become a sought-after collaborator in the local music scene. He's lent his talents to numerous band projects, both as a frontman and a supporting member, infusing each performance with infectious energy and soulful vocals. He runs a beloved house concert series in downtown Baltimore, providing a platform for local artists to showcase their talents in a welcoming and intimate setting. Stick with us for a deep dive conversation on where he came from musically and what his future plans are. And stay tuned after the show for a segment we call Live at the Lounge, featuring Ricky on the drums. Welcome.
Yeah, so I'm very happy to meet you, Ricky.
It's great
I really
to meet
am,
you.
And I'm a huge admirer. I've been in a band for about 10 years on the local scene, and I told, for the record, that's Mike Davis.
Yes.
I grew up with him.
Yeah, Amanda calls me Davis. He calls me Woe. So
yeah, in 1991, he was coined Woe Davis.
Oh, fair enough.
And because he was always the guy who could drive, but we would always be like, whoa, Davis, you know, Davis, what, you know, but so ever since then, that, so whenever I say that, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, what the hell is this guy talking about?
I gotcha.
But that being said, about eight years ago, I saw Never Never. I think that we were playing, I mean, maybe it was like a Reisterstown festival or I don't know where it was, but there was some bill that we were on that you guys were on.
Yeah.
Now, what got me into drums, like many other drummers, was John Bonham, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Now, I'm 48. What the hell am I?
You're 47.
All right.
You're 47.
That's close.
You'll be 48.
If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay, right. I knew that you were younger. That being said, I'm over there, and I'm like, oh, my God, look at this fucker. Like, he is slamming Bonham style, and it was Never Never, so I think you were playing, like, you know, Rock and Roll or Cashmere, like it was officially Zeppelin.
So absolutely. I just discovered that yesterday. You were in Never Never?
I still am.
You still are?
I joined actually probably close to 8 years ago now. I joined them. The band's been around for a little over 35 years. Spike has been keeping it going strong, and I love playing with that band because you know, as much as I love singing, I love playing drums, and I love playing behind a good singer.
Right.
And Spike is one of those guys, man. He just, his voice still carries. You know, I know he had some voice issues that came up a few years ago, and man, I didn't know him before that, so I only know him as this vocalist, and he is so strong, and he has such a great voice every night.
Yeah,
so
they kill. You guys kill.
Thanks,
I mean,
man.
It's unbelievable. That's
awesome. That's amazing.
But
I had no idea.
At that moment, I'm going, who the hell is this dude? And then everybody I'm talking to is going, oh, that's Ricky Wise. Oh, that's Ricky Wise. And I'm going, well, you know, does he know that he's badass, you know? And then I find out, you know, humbly, but you'd probably do. You know what I'm saying? Like, you've been doing it a while.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm just very happy to meet you, man.
It's wonderful to meet you, too.
It's awesome. Time. So I'll back up just a minute, since we didn't really go into it. We have Ricky Wise
live
in the studio.
Right? Sorry. Right. This is what we do.
And we're going to do a deep dive conversation about drums, movies, anything we can think of. So we could just start from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, I read your bio a little bit about your grandparents. Like, you got certain genres of movie from your grandparents, your father, your mother. Like, just tell me, like, a little bit about how you started in music. And I know you can play a lot of instruments. I don't know how many. I guess we'll get into that. But what did you start with?
So I started singing when I was three, really. Like, singing around the house. You know, I would sing along with anything that was on the radio.
When you were three, did you sound like Al Green?
No.
Has anybody ever told you that?
Dude, yeah. That's
not definitely good. Not at three. I worked at that show.
Right, yeah.
It's funny, and it's funny you bring that up, because that's the sort of stuff I was listening to at that age, I mean, my grandfather and my mom had a DJ business. And so they would play private parties or they would do things like that, but it was all word of mouth. So it was never anything too big, but they could bring me along for some of them every
That's
now and
awesome.
Then, you know? So, and there was also, I remember at that time, friends of ours owned a bar in Waldorf at the time called Wyville's Tavern.
Ooh.
I believe it was on like a Friday night or something like that. They were the guest DJ there mm-hmm. at the place. And so not often, but every now and then I would go early in the night where it wasn't too crazy and someone could be there.
Yeah, right.
And I would go and hang out with them and I just got to hear all of this music. So I heard, you know, stuff of 40s big band sort of stuff all the way up through the dance hits of the 90s that were happening.
Right.
And whatever caught my ear was what I would sing along with. And then we had the Disney sing-along videos. That's what I grew up with, you know, at that time. And that's all that I was doing at the house. And then the first instrument I really played, I guess the first instrument I played was a saxophone. But it was for about 3 months. It did not last. But I always wanted to play the drums. And I even at that point that I played the sax, I went to the band teacher and I said, look, I really want to play the drums. Can I do that? And she said, well, we already have a percussionist, so why don't you play the saxophone? And I went, I guess I'll do that, sure. But it always just kind of nagged at me.
What grade was this in?
That would have been fourth grade.
Fourth grade, okay.
And I was only at that school for 1 year, fortunately. So I moved on, and I went to the next school, and I said, hey, can I play drums? And they were like, yeah, absolutely. And I was like,
that's awesome.
Excellent.
Both of my kids are in the school band right now. Garrett plays the flute.
Yes.
And he wants us to get him a keyboard now, so he wants to move into that. And then Lincoln plays a snare. He's like, they call him special, so he plays like the drum, the triangle, like
the tambourine.
Man, he's running around the back of the band. It's awesome. But now he wants a kit also, so I think I'm going to get him. He suggested some electric kits because we live in a townhouse. I can't go blasted.
Right. I don't have a kit set up at the house.
He's a maniac.
So that's fifth grade, probably. You started being the drummer.
I started in like my elementary school band. I at least started to learn some rhythm sort of stuff.
Playing on a drum. Right. Okay.
And then in sixth grade, my mom bought me my first kit. Didn't have any cymbals, but I had five drums. A couple of toms and a snare drum and a kick drum And I threw up a pot lid that was a cymbal for a while, and I just beat the shit out of it. And I played Black Diamond by Kiss a bunch, and that's
that's right up my alley.
The Warren Davis special,
yeah, man. Kiss.
I grew up on Kiss.
Peter Criss was the reason I started playing drums.
Oh, that's awesome.
Good for you.
That was the stuff I listened to, man. I mean, the Alive 2 record was something we threw on the turntable a bunch.
That's so funny.
Well, you play the piano. I'm sure you could do a good version of Beth.
Yeah, right.
That would be great.
I barely play the piano. Right. I play a couple of chords that I can sing along with. That's about all I do.
Anybody who barely plays the piano
I've heard him play the piano.
Just for the record.
Several times.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I get it. I know what you mean, but you're good, Ben.
Well,
like, you're fine at the piano. I can't play the piano, all right? Let me ask you this, though. So what was your early interest in music, you said, was all over the place because of the DJ parents.
Yeah.
What was the first band that, like, became cult status, like where you couldn't quite, you were like, you know, that blew your socks off?
Oh, for sure. For me, it was Elvis.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
You know, I can see, like, it makes perfect sense, I swear.
Elvis, man, there was something about it, and I've gone back a lot to it these days to kind of revisit why it grabbed me, like what was it about it that I really loved. But I, at the time, I loved his music. Just anything that I heard, I absolutely loved. And, you know, come to realize as I grew up as well, it's just because he was influenced by all the black people that he was around.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's just what it was.
That's right. Evolution.
That's what he grew up in. And, and truthfully, I just fell in love with these tunes, these rhythms, and the way that he would display himself and seeing him in these, you know, pink suits and, you know, all this crazy sort of shit that at the time everybody just thought was absolutely insane.
Right.
Like who is this man? What is any of this? You know, and I fell in love with that. And I watched a bunch of his movies and they're hokey as shit, but they're fucking great.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's wonderful, you know?
If you're in, you're in.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? Like,
you know?
Movies are the greatest thing. It's like, if you're an Elvis fan, you're in, I find, all around.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I became so much bigger into the music side of it as I got older, too. The 70s band that he has with Ronnie Tutt on drums is unbelievable.
Nasty. And underrated.
Not to mention DJ Fontana. I've come to realize more recently, I met DJ's actually widow. She lives here locally, actually.
Wow.
But she was so sweet, and she let me into her house one day. A friend of a friend, you know, we went over to see some stuff, and the upstairs of her condo was basically a museum.
Wow.
And it was amazing, man. We got to see just incredible stuff up there. I won't give away. I won't give away too many of the things that are up there, but it was incredible to see that, like, there's pictures of him with the Rolling Stones,
and him
with, you know, all these different people, and when he met them, it was at these, you know, sort of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions or things like that. And these guys were looking for DJ. Like,
yeah, right.
These huge rock stars that have been the cream of the crop for all these years, they're looking for this guy. They're seeking out him.
Yeah. It's a musician's musician, if you will. You know what I mean?
Like, but my point to that, he played on all of that early stuff, all the way through all of his movies up until about the 68 special. Most of those drums are DJ Fontana, man. Dude. And there's some incredible stuff on that.
They're so nasty. Like, the chops on those albums are so nasty. That's good stuff.
Yes.
So what was your first drum set? Was it?
It was a Ludwig kit. Oh no, it was a CB kit. It was CB drums.
CB, nice.
They were used CB drums. And then the next kit that I bought was a Ludwig CS series, like the low, you know, sort of low-end Ludwig series. And then I've been gigging with a Leedy Slingerland kit.
Wow.
That's actually not mine, but I've been using for...
Wow, that's a hell of a loaner.
Over a decade. Well, he's my guitar player, so...
Okay, all right.
Nice. Jamie O'Connell, shout out.
Is that in the trio?
Yeah, absolutely. He plays with me every Monday night down at the Admiral's Cup, but we just realized recently we've been playing together weekly for a little over 12 years now.
Wow.
And when we started, it was this open mic night down in Bethesda, and this kit was the house kit for this gig. And once the gig dried up, I said, hey man, I don't really have a gig, or I don't have a kit that are these sizes that really sound like this. Can I borrow this for a while? Cause he wasn't really playing drums. And he said, yeah, sure. And I've had him ever since.
That's awesome. That's a good friend.
Oh, it's an amazing friend, yeah, man. That's a good friend. And he's also an amazing guitar player. So I'm thrilled to just have him nearby at any point in my life.
Hey, real quick, while you're mentioning the kit, is your Never Never kick drum 24? Yeah.
It's a 26.
Okay, you were talking about it yesterday.
Yeah.
Because that was the other thing about the Bonham thing. Yeah. I'm like, this fucker's like thunder, and I think he's got a custom bass drum, or he's a 26er with aluminum foil aligning the inside like Bonzo had.
No, what's crazy is those are just naturally loud drums. Tama did this limited run, these Tama Silver Stars that are all birch.
Wow.
So they're just loud drums.
They sound incredible.
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
I bought them because Nick Bertling, another previous drummer of Never Never, was playing them, and I watched him play one night, and I went, "Oh, those are amazing!"
Right.
And I went to the shop, what was Mid-Atlantic Drum, that's now Baltimore Drum, Keith Larson's shop.
Shout out, Keith Larson.
I went up there and I said, "Hey, man, I think I want to get these drums." And they were doing a sale that weekend, so I think I walked out of there with that kit for like $550 or something like that. And it's incredible. And it's, you know, 13, 16, 18, 26. So I did want a bigger rack tom, and I've been arguing with myself for years to order one, and I haven't done it yet. But I just love that kit, and it makes me play differently.
It's, you know, perfect.
Having that big kick drum, the response of it makes such a difference.
It's a different ball game, man.
Absolutely. Like,
it's a shockingly different ball game. I have a 20 inch.
Yeah, sure.
And so, you know, when I go to a 22, I'm like, damn, baby, this is thunder. Sure. You know, and then I go to a 24 and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, you know, so for sure.
A 26 has got to melt your face off.
It certainly can.
Whoa, you looked like you were going to say something.
No, okay. I was just reading through my notes.
All right. You kind of gave me a look. All right, so I asked you, if you want a question, I keep hogging the question.
No, that's fine. I know, dude, you've been waiting
I love it, man.
This is Ricky, Brian's dying
to talk to somebody about drums.
Yeah, real quick. You know,
I love talking about drums. Let's do it.
Just, I know at one point, I think on your website, I think I counted 7 bands that you were in.
I think that's probably close
now
to
I
it,
I think
yeah.
you've got it down to like 3. Like, you have the Ricky Wise Trio, The Rub, which I read about. I don't know if you're still doing that.
Well, so, yeah, it's less of a band that exists and more of a recording project that we did that we're just kind of releasing the songs from still. We rented a cabin January of 2021 which was still kind of the Wild West of the world.
I was
going
to say, that was gutsy.
It was, but we were good about it, man. We got the tests that we needed at the time, which was annoying because I think I paid $130 for a COVID test at that time.
Right.
Which was fucking that's so insane. Ridiculous.
Right, they had you.
Yeah, but it was like, we wanted to be safe. Sure. You know, everybody wanted to be cool about the thing. It was the weirdest way I've recorded music yet.
Wow, I bet.
Because right before we went, the guitar player for the project, we found out he had a New Year's gig, and we kind of all just said, we're not going to take gigs before this, just to make sure we're all home and safe and everything. And it wasn't quite cool with everybody for him to come stay at the house anymore. So it was like, all right, well, he's got a studio, so we'll just put him up there and we'll have him on a Zoom call with us during the day, and we'll talk and we'll hear him play some ideas, and we'll play some ideas back, and we'll just try to do this thing. And so we left the cabin that week having recorded drums and bass for tunes that we didn't know exactly what were going to sound like.
Wow.
But we recorded drums and bass for 7 tunes and we left.
That's awesome.
That's,
awesome.
That's what I like.
We
built
the tunes over the next couple of months, and it was really, really wonderful. In fact, the piano ballad that I play every month, we recorded a version of it at the cabin. I just haven't released
really?
It.
Really? That's great. I mean, I'll get into the woodshed. Right. Yeah. You play the two songs in the woodshed. We'll get into the woodshed a little bit.
Right.
But those songs are... they're magical.
Yeah, well, look, I'm pointing at him because right before you came here, he was talking about
these songs. They grab you.
Like he said, we're going to get into the woodshed thing in a little bit, but we're going to try to go in a little bit of order. But he had just mentioned, he's like, dude, in these two songs that he plays, it's like they're evolving. Or something, you know, and he was just mentioning them. And then so you say that, and I'm looking at him going, is that the song you're talking about? You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's good
stuff. One of them definitely is that the slow ballad that I do every month. And at the Woodshed, it's become a tradition that the guests, one of them sits in with me every month. So I have a different soloist on this tune every time. And
that's awesome.
And it's so fun for me because I get to hear it differently.
Yeah, right. It keeps you alive. It keeps it fresh.
And it's cool just being in the audience, just watching them, like kind of just, they're watching Ricky play, and they're like, all right, I'm gonna jump in now, and then they just it always works,
right. That's perfect, man. That's good stuff.
So there's another band that we're seeing on May 24th that I don't know anything about, and that's the Reverend Smackmaster and the Congregation of Funk.
It's the greatest
band. We're going there for Julie of Sweet Lita. It's her birthday weekend, so we're going there.
Oh, that's so
what,
great.
What is that about?
Okay, so
it sounds amazing.
Yeah,
it's so fun.
Incredible name.
It's such a fun band. Yeah. It is another cover band that I play
in.
But
the name is fantastic.
It's incredible.
So I will give a shout out to an old buddy of mine that I have not talked to in years, but a buddy of mine, Zach Yulnowski. When we were in middle school, this man came to me and he said, our band is going to be called Reverend Smackmaster and the Congregation of Funk. And I went, okay, I don't know if that's going to work, man.
Right.
And he was just like, okay, never mind. And then it went on to something else, but that stuck with me.
Right.
Like a motherfucker. Like it just hung on to the back of my brain. So
it's incredible.
Kristen Lagana is the singer for this band, and her and I sing together, but she's our lead singer. And she came to me, I guess we put this together about 10 years ago. It was kind of a last minute sort of thing. They needed a band to fill in for something that I think Matt Davis was putting together, who used to work for 98 Rock.
Yeah, right.
And he was putting something together at the Hard Rock, and they needed a band last minute. And her and I had talked back and forth about doing like a soul or a funk project for a while, and doing the sort of Motown and old school sort of funk stuff. And she said, well, do you want to try to put something together for this thing? And I said, okay, if we can find the guys, yeah, sure.
Right.
So we reached out to all of our friends, and we found a keyboard player, we found a guitar player, we found a bass player, and we found a horn section. It was like, okay, I guess we're going to do this gig, you know? And at the time, we did like one gig a year for 4 or 5 years. So it was nothing. It was just a thrown together thing for the summer. You know, we just kind of did that. And then we decided we just kind of wanted to do some more gigs with the band. We started picking up some corporate sort of stuff and weddings and all that sort of
stuff.
What
kind of set list? Like
so it's
general.
It's changing a bit, but when we started out and what it had been up until more recently was really the old school Motown stuff.
Nice.
With, you know, 60s, 70s sort of stuff with a couple of newer tunes that had that same sort of vibe that we would throw in the set. And
dude, I can't wait.
Right. Yeah. That
yeah.
Sounds,
it's super high energy. Like it was pulpy. Really fun. Yeah. It's a really fun pulpy. Band. And we have a great time every time we get together, but it's also been the side project of side projects for basically everybody in the band until more recently. And now, Kristen, particularly, this is one of her main driving things, and fortunately that it is, because she is pushing us along, and we just had a really great talk the other day about shaping our set list in a bit of a different way of stuff that we want to play. We don't really want to play, you know, sort of the hits and stuff that we've had to play for all these years and things like that. We love playing them. We love the tunes, but they get a little old after you play them for a while.
Right.
And we also, as our set lists evolve and as we continue to play, you know, if you want to, musicians evolve. And we have decided we just want to go in a little bit different direction, not stylistically, but just going for a little bit deeper cuts of some stuff and finding some different things that appeal to us, that we can play well, that not necessarily everybody knows, but that we feel good about playing.
Right, and there's still probably the same kind of vibe. So if you come to party with Reverend Smackmaster, you'll still rock out.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
It's just deeper cuts or whatever.
I don't know anything about that venue either. I haven't.
Oh yeah,
it
just
before.
Opened not too long ago. Yeah, it used to be. What was it before? Oh, I'm not going to remember. It doesn't matter. But the Encore there in Columbia, it's a cool little room, man. And a lot of my friends have been playing there recently and just said the crowds have been really lovely of people coming through.
Yeah, it's cool. We have tables and everything. We have table seats.
Yeah, I think it's like a 150-seat room. Yeah. So it's not too big, not too small. It's just really lovely.
Well, so after you blew my face off with Never Never kind of buttoning this up real quick. Look, I'm serious. It's all coming to me. I'm new at this interview thing, Rick.
Hey, man.
And, you know, we're
let's
going
talk.
For it.
I'm all for it, man. Yeah, I'm here.
But it's coming to me because this is the thing is after that.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that dude was badass. You know, that's incredible. So then I work for Baltimore County, okay?
Yeah.
And I, one of my parks is Lerman Theater.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Okay, yeah,
so,
sure. This is the other band.
Yeah, so I'm sitting here, and now my top three bands of all times, okay, is Phish, Frank Zappa, and Steely Dan. Okay? Sure. Now, what am I going to say? The next thing I know, a year or so later, Technicolor Motorhome goes through Lerman Theater.
Yeah.
The Steely Dan cover band.
Yep.
And you're the drummer of the damn Technicolor. Now, you're
So I'm with Carrie Ziegler's Expensive Hobby.
Well, that's my second question.
So I'm not with Technicolor at all.
Okay. So, okay. Well, let me ask you this. Did you fill in with Technicolor?
I don't think so.
I swear to you, one gig many years ago, Technicolor Motorhome played Lerman Theater.
Yeah.
And I swear you were...
I don't think it was me, but the only reason I say that is because Carrie's band does do the Steely Dan stuff, and we also do... what was the other band you just said? Zappa. So we do that stuff in his band, and we play the Lerman every summer. So.
Well, that's my... I know Ziegler does.
Okay,
so take the Technicolor out of it.
Ziegler
is the next one. So Glenn Workman is Technicolor, and Kerry Ziegler, they both are ex-Crack the Sky members.
Glenn's still with Crack the Sky.
Glenn's with Crack the Sky, right.
Yeah.
So,
but Kerry's not yet.
You just played with those guys.
Yeah, we played with... Technicolor.
That was a Goucher. Oh,
nice.
Right. It was a veteran's band.
Yeah.
Glenn, this guy.
All those guys are wonderful.
Yeah,
man.
But
really
Glenn doesn't wear shoes.
He never wears shoes. Not once.
I'm talking 19 degrees.
Ever.
Yeah, we were in a radio station.
Oh, I think he posted a picture on Facebook when it just recently snowed of him out in his driveway shoveling snow in bare feet.
Yeah, I'm in
the
radio station.
Craziest thing I've ever seen.
I'm not like ew, but I'm just like, wow, man.
No,
like,
it's wild.
How?
It's wild.
Like how?
Yeah.
You know, like you gotta have
you
leather.
Develop, Ben Davis developed leather feet from walking around Ocean City with no shoes for years.
Right. It's an acquired thing. Yep. But Kerry Ziegler, right?
Yeah.
So then I before I knew you were his drummer, I'm listening. Some of my bandmates went one night to Kerry Ziegler Expensive Hobby.
Oh, nice.
And the whole night they're sending me these videos of this set list that is like my shit. Like
it's
every, oh my God, it's like cut for cut. It's everything I love.
Yeah.
And I'm going, who the hell's the drummer of that? Like, because that's some nasty ass shit. And they're going, it's that guy from Never Never. And I'm like, go to hell. Like, I'm like, is that Ricky Wise?
Go to
this
hell.
Guy
that's
is
awesome,
like,
man. I didn't know any of that stuff.
Yeah, cool. And because it's a different style, you know. Like, I mean, I've played for a very long time, and you know, Steely, Zappa, you know, all that kind of stuff is a different level of musicianship that is not for the faint of heart.
No,
and
it is.
You know, and you've really got to be game for it, and you've got to understand, and you've got to really know the music or be able to read sheet music,
which you know. No one's reading sheet music right there, but the horn section is, but. The thing that happened with that is I actually joined Carrie's band first. I joined up with Carrie, I guess it was March of 2016 now. And Lee Townsend, the bass player from the Ravens.
Okay.
He and I were about to start this project with another guy around here, and it wasn't really coming together. But Lee sent me an email while it was happening, and he said, look, Carrie's looking for a new drummer, and he's hoping he can sing, so you should give him a call. And I knew about the band. I knew the name, but I, you know, I'm 24. I had no idea, you know, right, what I was doing. And so I called Carrie, and we hit it off on the phone and just talked for a while. And so he said, well, how about you learn these six tunes and come over to the house and we'll jam through them a little bit. And that was a nerve-wracking audition because it was just bass and drums.
Oh, shit.
And I don't think either of us really knew what to do with that. But what we just did was like, okay, there's a lot of rest that's about to happen here. What are we going to do? And he's like, yeah, we'll just skip ahead to the next section. And at the time, like, I had been going over these tunes so much that I just had a complete form in my brain like, I don't even know what the next section means. Like, I'm just thinking of this as a whole thing. So,
right.
So it was a crash course, man. And that same night that I had first called him, I was playing a gig with Cage and Kelly, great guitar player around here.
Yeah,
also the guitar player for Never Never.
I was just saying, right? I know that name, and yes, it's from, yeah.
And but we were doing a gig for his old trio, and I said to Carrie, "I'm going to play with him," and he said, "Well, you know, we need a guitar player too. So if you mention it to him, you know, do." And I went over and I said, "Look, have you talked to Carrie?" And he said, "Yeah, but I don't think I can do it because I've got the Never Never schedule, and I just don't think I have the time for it." And I said, "Well." We talked for a long time that night. Cajun and I talked for probably about 2 or 3 hours between like set breaks on the gig and then even after the gig.
Right,
we stuck
right.
around and talked for a while. But ultimately, he was like, all right, well, I'll call him and see if I can do the dates. And that first year, there was only one date conflict that he had. So it was like, all right, let's give it a go. And Cajun, of course, didn't have to audition.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He did not. But I did. And so the next week after I did the bass and drum thing, I went back and we had more of the band there and we played and it was really fun. And there was some sort of connection that was already there. And I immediately realized I was not as good as the rest of these guys.
Oh, man.
You know, so that makes you want to play better.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I just week after week, when we first joined that band, we rehearsed every Tuesday night from like October until the first gig that we had the first week in March.
Nice.
So it was weekly. We
right.
were there every week. We were learning 5 or 6 new tunes every week.
Right.
So we learned
hard.
Yeah.
Tunes.
And we learned about 70 or 80 tunes in that 4 months.
Damn.
You know, it was crazy. And it was such a crash course in all sorts of different types of music. I mean, we were playing Rush. We're playing Yes. We're playing Chicago and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And we're doing all these harmonies. And we're having to sing and play all this stuff.
Yeah, it's serious
you know, it was
work.
Really, really fun. Unfortunately, I did just leave the band. My last gig with them will be in April here. I'm so thankful that I've had the time with that band because they have made me such a better player
for it, man.
I mean, it is one hell of a band. Those guys are all such supportive dudes and incredible musicians themselves. And I'm so thankful to be in that throne. But to your point, it was crazy to me at that time that I was in both of those.
I mean,
gigs,
24 having
know?
A seat like that in a band with a four, you know, or a great player all around. I mean, whoever, you know, whatever his bona fides are,
sure,
they're incredible players.
Yeah.
And to be 24 and harness that is gutsy, dude. That's
it was
good stuff.
It was a lot, and I didn't take it lightly. And it every gig meant the world to me. Like I just really,
I bet,
I wanted to play my heart out. You know,
right.
I wanted to make sure that it was good because I knew. You know, these are old school cats. You don't cut it.
I know.
You're going to lose that gig.
I know. And those old school cats, I mean, I've played, you know, I'm on a different level, but I fill in.
Sure.
And I fill in whoever needs me. And with old school cats, it's no joke. They just don't have time for it. They, you know, you better have a good meter.
They've been through it. Yes.
Well,
they've
you just better have a good meter.
Right. Yeah.
They don't want flash. They want you to keep time, you know? And it's like, and, but that being said, you know, that's really good stuff. I mean, I love that. And it's a shame that you're moving on. They will be fine, and you'll be
fine.
But it, you know, that's one of those noteworthy things. I'm going, this fucking Ricky Wise guy. Like, oh, do wait. And then, then
I like it. Bring it on. Give me more.
Then I'm sitting there, maybe a year after this, and somebody sends me a video of the Gimme Shelter. And you are wailing the high pitch part. Perfect in Gimme Shelter as you're playing, and I'm going, this dude's like Pavarotti, you know, he's like Pavarotti for fuck's sake. He's, you know, he's a legend behind the kit. He's a fucking harmonizing genius. He's singing. Nobody can hit that note. Like, seriously, the Stones can't even hit that shit. Like, the women they bring on the stage with them, or the people they bring on the stage.
Oh, they're crushing it.
Yeah, but they can't hit that note. Like, that note, man, it's serious. It's
awesome. I've seen him. I've seen him play a lot lately.
Well, then I start deep diving into, you know, the Ricky Wise vocal run, and it's like, man, you're just, you're MVP here.
Oh,
like,
man, thanks so much.
Like, I'm serious, man. It's good shit. And then this guy, of course, then I know him my whole life, and he's like, yeah, there's this guy, you know, Ricky Wise, and I'm going, Ricky Wise? I said, this guy is, you know, and he's like, yeah,
he just won't get out of here.
I said, you know, he's all over the place.
This was like 2 years ago, because the first Woodshed show I went to was Starbelly. I told him about it, and I was like, yeah, this dude Ricky Wise, like, runs this. He sang some songs, and he's like, Ricky Wise.
I said, my Ricky Wise.
Like, what do you mean? I don't know. Do you know? He's like, I've never met him,
right?
But I know him.
Right. I said, yeah, I have a strange man crush over the last decade with this cat. And it keeps, go into the Woodshed a little bit, because I have not experienced that.
No, you have not. Yeah. I have not as much as I want to, but there's a show to it. Well, I mean, we're not really saying tomorrow, because this is going to air later. But
yeah, but there's in real time, there's a show tomorrow.
Right. In real time, there's a show tomorrow, and you have them once a month all year long.
Yeah, tell me.
Let's talk about how that came, because I've met Nate now.
Yeah.
I've met you. I mean, I already know Sparks, who's old. She's always everywhere.
Yeah,
so
Sparks
how did the Woodshed come about? Because that is one of the most interesting events that you could possibly go to, and the coolest.
Yeah, like, you had 96 bands, and then how did this come about?
Yeah, the Woodshed is cool. Like, it's indescribable. Like, we've taken people there, and I'm trying to describe what you're going to experience, and you really can't. You just can't.
And somebody confirmed that. Somebody else said that.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Amanda, your wife, was like, you know, I understand why, like, you can't really.
And it's just, everybody's such good people there, too. Right. So, so, like, how did that come about?
So, so Nate and I met. He was a runner around the neighborhood. Like, he would just come running by, and this was during the pandemic. My duo was kind of the only thing that was happening at the time. Shout out Warren Bowes.
I've seen that. You're the bass. You play.
I play bass.
I do play bass
in that game.
Okay. All right. During the summer, every Thursday, me and Amanda go there, and we went there one time, and he wasn't there. And she messaged him, like, "Where the hell are you?
I couldn't
be there.
I'm sorry, I couldn't be there tonight." I don't call myself a bass player, but I do play bass a little bit, and that's basically the only gig I do it with anymore. But with the mighty Warren Bowes of Speakers of the House and the Almighty Senators from all these years. Nate was this guy that would just kind of pop up. He's about 6'5", so he's hard to miss.
Right.
But he's a slender sort of guy, so he would come running by, and he'd do all sorts of shit, and he would just kind of sit down and have a beer with some friends that we knew. And and one day he said, well, look, I'm having a party at my house for the 4th of July. I would really love for you guys to come, you know, talking to me and Warren. And we said, sure, man, absolutely. And we immediately went to a couple of the friends that we knew, and we were like, hey, man, we don't know this guy. Is this cool? Like, should we go to this?
Right.
Like, is it worth going to? And they were like, no, Nate's great. Go to his place. And we were like, all right. So the 4th of July day came, and that band, Speakers of the House, that Warren's with, played in the afternoon down in Bertha's. We had a lovely afternoon. Everybody's dancing and having a great time. And then most of that party just wandered down to Nate's house, you know, over in Canton. And we all just kind of walked as a big group down to this place and had a great time. And when we first got there, he was very nervous. And he came up to me and he goes, all right, when Warren gets here, I want to play something for you guys. And we said, oh, okay, that's fine. You know, I didn't know he really played, but when I walked in, I saw there was this beautiful Steinway piano in the middle of his room and this disco ball hanging from the ceiling. And
so all that equipment is his.
Well, the piano and the disco ball, okay. Yeah. They were already there, but the PA and stuff we bring every month. Right. But that stuff was there, and I couldn't believe this space. And so Warren showed up, and Nate goes, all right, I'm going to play for you guys. I haven't had a drop of alcohol, so I want to get to that. So I just want to sit down and play for you. And we're like, yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. And he sat down and he played this Chopin piece. And man, for the next like 5 minutes after he played it, I couldn't talk to the guy because I kept welling up with emotion. Wow. And I was like, what? I remember walking up to him at one point and I went, ha.
Right.
And so we just kind of hit it off a little bit that day. Later on that night, another friend of his sat down and played piano, and I found out she's actually a scientist now. Like, she does some really crazy shit out in the world, you know. Where I think the thing that she had created at the time was a machine that you could do localized blood testing at doctor's offices, smaller doctor's offices for STD testing, instead of having to ship it off. So you could get the results like almost immediately.
And wow.
This is insane. And right. She used to be a musician. And it didn't really pan out. So she went into this.
Wow.
Okay.
She's like Jeff Skunk Baxter.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right, yeah. You know, she's just got that brain, man. And so it was amazing. But she played, she sat down and she played Dream a Little Dream of Me, sitting, playing piano and just kind of singing to the room. And I
beautiful.
I said, Nate was kind of crouched next to me while we were listening to this happen. I said, man, you should do this more often. And he said, you're probably right. And I said, and we just kind of left it at that. And I gave it about a week and I called him and I said, look, I've had an idea for a house concert series for years, but I've not had a house. So how about your place? And he said, well, what would that entail? And we talked for about an hour on the phone and it turned into him being very excited about it and me going, okay, hold on, let's try it and let's see what happens. And then right. We'll go from there, you know? And the first one that we did was September of 2021. And we did a test concert. I opened it up and we had Eric Scott play the show with his guitar player Dan Leonard, and it sold out. We had about 50 people come through, and we borrowed some folding chairs from my mom's church, you know, and, wow. And some different things like that, and just made it sort of DIY happen that first show. And we got some charcuterie boards from Ale Mary's from down in the city.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, so it was really fun to put it all together, and we couldn't have loved it more. Nate couldn't have loved it more. I mean, he loved opening up his home to these people to just throw this sort of dinner party basically right. Once a month and also have a fantastic intimate show that would happen in his home.
Right. Know? Unique. I mean, it's got to be unique as hell.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's almost like there's two sections. So there's the seating area where you're just sitting there right with you're basically sitting with the band.
Yeah.
And then there's the couch area where you could sit over there and lounge and relax, which the band is still right next to you, but there's a big TV where you could watch the show. It's broadcast there. It's being recorded.
Yeah. So you can see and it straight on.
Yeah.
Still.
It's catered. There's awesome, beer, wine. I mean, it's
and so it's how do amazing. You, and so you create demand by it being so intimate. There's only 50 tickets available or something to that.
Yeah. 60 tickets now. We've been trying to just make it a little better every month. You know, we look for original artists around here, but also we're trying to grab national artists that are touring around that need some extra shows. I mean, one of the reasons we created it was the little bit of time that I've spent out on the road. One of the things I realized was that the house concerts was really the way that some of these artists are making a living. You know, I mean, you'd play some of these smaller clubs and yes, you may get a handful of people that'll come out and see the show, which is nice,
right.
But it doesn't make any money.
Right.
And so going and playing these house concerts, you wind up having hosts that are incredible. One, they're feeding you that night. Two, they're probably putting you up to stay. Right. And three, they've brought along all of their friends that are in their community to just come and see a show. They don't care who it is. They just want to come see music.
Right.
And when they get there, they wind up being, you know, usually blown away by whatever artist it is. And they just want to buy their merchandise. And that's how these artists are surviving on the road at a smaller level. You know,
sure,
bigger artists are doing okay.
Sure.
But at a local touring level, you know, that's how a lot of them are getting through.
Right.
And I wanted to have a place in Baltimore. Now, there's a couple of house concert series around the area, and there's definitely another one or two here in the city. Club 603, I think, is one of them. Just want to give a shout out to those because they're great series, and I don't want anybody to be disparaged because I think just putting live music out there is what we should all be doing. But I wanted to have a unique experience for people to come to that really felt like every time you walked in, you didn't know what you were going to experience, but it was going to be enjoyable, and you were going to have some sort of new experience every time.
You nailed it.
That's incredible.
It's wonderful.
Well, look, I'm going to segue into a different angle here real quick. So part of the reason for the show is we're trying to bring positivity to Baltimore. We want to bring a better light to Baltimore. You know what I mean? And
I'm
so
all about that.
The Nate's Place thing sounds like it's right up that alley. You sound like you're right up that alley. You spend a lot of time in Baltimore.
I live in Baltimore.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you afraid of Baltimore?
Not at all.
Good.
No. I mean, it's funny, man. And not to continue the woodshed thing too much, but that was another big part of what we were doing with it. You know, it was directly out of the pandemic. One of the big things about Nate's 4th of July party was the first time that a group was kind of getting back together. We were all sort of vaccinated and feeling good and, you know, feeling like we could be around people. And that was the first sort of gathering we had, you know.
Right.
And so throwing those shows, especially the first several shows that we did, it felt like the only time we could get together.
Right.
You know? It wasn't.
Right.
It was starting to become more available that way. But that was something that started to build very early on. And then as we've progressed in the thing, it's just become a good group of community that we're trying to build down there. And it's another thing that we're trying to promote as well, because I want people to come from outside of the city into the city as often as they can, you know. And I play with so many bands that play out in the counties that I talk to people all the time that tell me the same sort of thing, where it's just like, well, we would come and see you, but it's down in Baltimore. And I'm like, yeah, but what's the issue with that?
Yeah,
there's no issue.
There is no issue.
I've not had one issue living in that city.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really is such a beautiful neighborhood. Now, I do understand. Look, I'm not going to disparage any news that's actually factual. Things happen. It's a major city. Crime, violence, things are going to happen. But if you look at the way these patterns and things happen, bullets are not flying around. People are not falling out daily. There are some sort of targeted thing that's happening. It's unfortunate that it's happening in Baltimore, but somebody's after somebody. It's not some random sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And
if you're not living some sort of nefarious life, I don't think you have anything to worry about, you know?
Right.
So truthfully, I mean, that's where it all comes from. And I, you know, I walk the streets at night. I feel fine.
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
well,
this is my neighborhood. It's where I live.
Did you look deep into the Sanity Lounge logo and notice the Baltimore background?
I did actually just now see the skyline up in the back. I love it.
Yeah, because that's the heart, you know, one of the hearts of the show is it's not like, you know, again, we acknowledge the reality, like, you know, there's bad, but I got to tell you, the streets of Westminster are
just
pretty amped up right now. And per capita, it might be worse. You know, it's like, I mean, so it's, I just want to always try to bring up, if you live down there, because I work with a lot of people that live there and they get upset.
Yes.
You know, they're like, look, you know, I'm not afraid. Everybody's telling me I should be, I'm crazy or whatever.
I mean, I lived down there for a decade. I mean, me and Amanda met at Ale Mary's, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Lovely.
Right, that's good.
And that's two blocks from my house.
Yeah.
You know?
I love the city.
Yeah.
Me too.
And I love the music scene down there.
Right, and that's the other thing we're trying to promote is just Baltimore artists, Baltimore good vibes.
Yeah.
You know, Nate's Place, it sounds like we ought to get that cat in here eventually. Or, you know,
Nate's an interesting cat. You'd probably learn more about him than I'd even know.
Right.
I know.
He's lovely, man.
Yeah.
I'd
love to find out.
Do you
know what he does? I mean, I know he's got patents hanging in
the
place.
He is. I don't know exactly his job title, but he is a higher up with Verizon Media through the Yahoo department.
Okay.
So, wow.
He's doing all right.
Right.
But I truthfully, I don't know exactly what he does, but he does oversee quite a few people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in his job description to go and deal with his teams in India and in Ireland and in some different places. So he's quite up there and really a good person in this world, man. I mean, you know, as I make some jokes about him, you know, he does do well for himself, but he also wants to give back to the community. He wants to make sure that people are taken care of. And that was a big part of why we started to put this together, because we care about this city. We care about the community that we're trying to build down here. And it's through positivity that we're trying to do that.
Right.
I mean, it's that same sort of thing, through love and through positivity of just putting music out there. That's the thing I know how to do. If I knew how to do something else, I'd do it. But, music is all that I've really known what to do with my life. It's the only calling that I really had from an early age. And I've tried to just do it as best as I can every time I go out and do it.
Right.
And I feel that if people continued to live that way, regardless of what they did with their life, but if they had that care and they had that respect into everything that they did, I think we'd be in a different world.
You know? Agree.
I truly do. And for me, it causes me to think about the music aspect a lot more, just because that's my world. And so I think there's a respect that I'm working on this thing right now of just trying to put respect back into the music, because it has given me so much
life. That's good stuff.
And I think that's a big thing that we're missing out on. There's so many gigs that you do with people that are just trying to go through the motions, and you hear that you just feel that their heart is not really in the right place of this
Absolutely.
Thing. And if we're going to go out and do it, you should want to do it.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's the same thing with any sort of community you're trying to build. You don't want to do it inauthentically. I'm not trying to do this with anybody crazy or anything like that. This is through the only thing I know what to do. You know, I mean, I know how to play a little bit of music, and I know some other musicians that I think people should know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
That's all that I wanted to build.
That is the goal here. I mean, that's me and Amanda love local music. I mean, you can go see bands anywhere, but I mean, it's so expensive now to just go to a concert, and we just rather support local music, and we do it all the time.
And it's like Stavi's blowing up, like things are becoming good things are happening in Baltimore.
Yeah. And with this, we just want to give the bands that I love, that I tell you about all the time, just a platform, a place to play. And really, just so, I mean, just for me personally, I love seeing you play, but I don't know anything about you.
Absolutely.
I consider you a friend now. Now we're friends.
Absolutely. Like,
that's
for
it.
Sure we are.
You have me for life now.
I'm in, brother.
Yeah, you'll never get rid of me. Right.
No, it's great. I mean, our history is, I mean, it all just revolves around music. I mean, we've been seeing Phish together since 1994.
We saw the Colt 70s Fest at Merriweather in 92.
Yeah.
Well done.
With, you know, like,
we've been seeing shows for three decades.
For a minute.
Almost four.
Ricky, I'm going to kind of turn maybe to what my wife might deem as the selfish portion of the conversation.
Yeah.
And which is, first of all, you mentioned your mother has a church.
Oh, she's involved with her church. It's not her church, but we started going to this church when I was in fifth grade. It was a place, I think at the time we were looking for our own bit of community. My parents split when I was pretty young, but, my dad had remarried at that time, and we had a different life going on and everything. But my mom just moved up near where we were living, and she was just trying to find some different things around there, I think, and also was looking for her faith and different things. So we wound up going to that church, and I made some of my best friends at that.
And that's how the music thing really started.
It's how some of that stuff did. I mean, we started a choir there at that church. You know, we weren't entirely happy with the sort of adult choir that was happening all the time, where it was all
the
same
old man.
Yeah, the same hymns and all the same, whatever. Right. We wanted a little pep in our step, you know, little things like that. Like we bought bowling shirts for the choir, you know. So it was something where I learned a lot about community in that, because it was a small town church. It was it's a Savage United Methodist Church in the tiny town of Savage here in Maryland. And
Savage.
It was mostly people that lived right there in Savage that would kind of just walk down to do the service on a Sunday. And it was an older community, and I've gotten to know a lot of those people, and they're lovely, and they've supported my career tremendously over the years. And, you know, I'm not as active in the church or anything anymore, but, my mom is still very active there and runs a theater program kind of sure. through there and some different things. So she's always creating things as well. So.
Well, to be clear, so I am a spiritual person, you know,
oh, sure.
I've done a lot of like reading on different religions, literally. I
yeah.
mean, for the last 20 years, when I was younger, I didn't learn a damn thing.
Sure.
Like really,
I mean, get it.
I literally learned nothing yeah. until I was like 34.
Sure.
And from the time I hit 34 on, I've been just a reading machine and, yeah. you know, so I've read a lot about religious stuff like that, spirituality. But what interests me a lot mm-hmm. is drums
sure.
and the history of drums.
Yeah.
And drums, I had a very rough history early on, addicted to alcohol, drugs, a lot of stuff. And drums really saved me.
Sure.
Okay. Now, when you look into it, history of drums,
yeah.
ancient history of drums, there's a lot there. And I think my question to you is that, do you ever consider that? Like when you're playing, in other words, I know a lot of drummers that just love playing. They don't know why they love playing. They just love playing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a competition or a sport to them. But I don't know sure. if they've ever considered mm-hmm. that if you take a breath and step back, like some magical shit happens
yeah.
with rhythm and drums. And I'm just wondering, have you ever had any kind of like out of body vibes while you're playing? Have you ever felt like you're, you know, elated enough that you're, you know, that you're almost,
out of body
not,
experience.
Not out of body, but like, yeah. you know, like in other words, like when I first started playing, when I couldn't play for shit, mm-hmm. but I still was in a band playing.
Sure.
I would have moments occasionally, not every night, but occasionally where I couldn't miss.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't thinking, you know, nothing's happening. I can't miss. And any other night I would be tense and whatever. But it's like something just takes over and you're in this spirit world of like froth.
Sure.
And, you know, and if you look into drum history, there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
And so I guess my first question is that, are you aware of any stuff like that when you play, or do you just play and think of music as one, like, do you separate drums from the good vibes of music?
Oh, sure. I don't think that I do, only because, I had this sort of physical visualization come up a couple of years ago as a drummer, and that visualization was that of a steam engine. And what I mean by that is that if you're playing behind a band, you're the drummer. You are the thing that is propelling this thing forward.
Yeah.
If you put the coal into it, it's going to go faster. If
right.
you take the coal out of it, it's going to go slower.
Right.
It is all dependent on what you're doing back.
Right.
Now, you do have to read the vibe of everybody else on the stage. You have to know what sort of trajectory you're all going to go on. But the job is to keep that thing on the tracks and to keep that thing in motion. And
right.
truthfully, the tune that did it for me was playing Sweet Emotion for like the 900th time.
Wow.
It was something about the end of that tune where I was just in this sort of pattern that I got, for those of you that are not seeing me, I'm just moving my arms, but
right.
it was this sort of thing. And I realized, that felt like that sort of the way you see a steam engine's wheels move.
Absolutely.
And so I had that in me for a while that it was like, okay, that's the job back there. I have to be the steam engine that propels the thing along. That's great. Then more recently, my bass player has gotten me a lot more into jazz. Shout out to Jeff Reed.
Nice.
And it's not that I've never been into jazz. I've always enjoyed jazz to listen to, but he's gotten me into it in a way that I'm actually thinking about music differently.
Right.
And it's fascinating because there's a lot of things in that world that facility-wise I can't do at all. But in listening to the music and hearing the way that the band works together, it makes absolute sense to me.
Right.
Even when there's not a steady driving beat. And that was something that really stuck out to me. I've been really tripping out on a guy, Brian Blade, recently.
I know that name.
He's incredible. Jazz guy. His last sort of big gig was with the Wayne Shorter Quartet at the end.
I know that guy. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
And he's incredible, man. And yeah. But I watched him. There's a master class that he did on YouTube that he did down at University of New Orleans in 2010. And he was talking about the idea of time. And he was like, I've played for a lot of guys that need me to just keep time back there. And I had the immediate thought of, well, isn't time happening?
Right.
You know, even if I'm not dictating, isn't it still happening? We started the tune. Right. Why would it stop? If we haven't ended the tune, why would any of that stop? And that resonated with me so heavily. Damn. Because I love the drums, but I love to think of them as not drums as often as I can. Just in the sense of, can I make them musical? Can I make these melodic?
Right.
Without having, you know, Terry Bozzio's fucking 1900. Yeah.
Right.
Can I make this as something that people not only groove to, but can be played as a little more of a live instrument, a lead instrument, as opposed to just being a rhythmic thing?
Right.
And can I also, you know, deliver the groove when it needs to be there? But for things that are going to be a little more, for lack of a better term, ethereal, things that are going to be just a little more out there than anything else, what can I change about the way that I'm playing? What can I open up to being something else? And so that's where it taps into a more spiritual side for me, where it's, where I'm not necessarily thinking of the drums separately, but I am thinking of them in the sense of the music differently.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, trying to build something that is, I realized more recently that something I want out of my music is something that people have, it may be familiar to people, but it's going to also have surprises, and it's going to have elements of things that are unique, and it's not going to be able to be compared to other things as easily, you know.
It's the Ricky Wise, you know what I mean? It's not anything else.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. That's
but I'm very excited about finding what that means, and I think truthfully the biggest direction is just in sound, in sonic movement, because a lot of these rhythms and a lot of melodies have been done. You know, we've strung all the notes together. We've played all the rhythms the way that they've been played. It's all been there. But it's the arrangements, and it's the way that things can be presented sonically. And I think the other thing that's not really being tapped into, especially in sort of mainstream music, is the emotional side of music.
Right.
When I play a piece, I feel emotion every time I do it. It doesn't matter if it's mine or somebody else's, but if I sit down and perform some piece of music, whether I'm on the drums or anything, I have emotion attached to it. Mm-hmm. Good, bad, ugly, it doesn't matter. It's going to be there. And right. And my job, I feel my job, is less as an entertainer and more as a storyteller in that sense.
Right.
I hate the phrase storyteller. That's fucking dumb. But when we're musicians, if you're a writer, that's fucking great. But I do think that it is painting a picture with, sometimes with words, sometimes with noise, sometimes with any of this. But if we can tap into that emotional side of things, that's what I'm about.
Right.
That's all that I care about connecting to. You know, I mean, if you resonate with the music that I do, that's really wonderful. But if it moved you, I feel even better about it.
Right. That's good stuff, man. Yeah. That's wonderful.
I feel like that's, from a non-musician standpoint, it fascinates me that you guys can just fill in at all.
Yeah, sure. Not every drummer can do that. Right. That's the other thing.
Well, sure. Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, like you've got to be confident. The drummer you're going up to has got to, you know, it's like, but that's unique. You know, you've got to be able to be confident.
And there's a lot of things that play with that. And it comes from a lot of different places, and guys have a lot of different schools about that too. Mm-hmm. But a big thing is being prepared, man. Like, there's so many dudes that will show up to fill in on gigs that are completely unprepared.
Right.
And they don't get the call again, man.
Right.
And that's the easiest thing you can do. I mean, and I will say, I'm shitty about this sometimes, but I never sit behind a kit when I'm learning tunes. It's not something that I do because I hear the rhythms in my head. I know where they're going to be played. If at most I'll tap on my lap for a little bit, but mostly I'm listening to the tune ad nauseum.
Right.
I want to know everything that's happening in that tune. Mm-hmm. I want to know what the bass is doing. I want to know what the guitar is doing. I want to know what the keyboards are doing. I want to know what the singer is doing. Right. If it's not me, I want to know what that's right. doing. And I want to know that because I want to know how to shape the tune. If I'm not going to play that part exactly, that's fine. If the band leader is okay with that, it's
right,
fine.
Right, 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 right.
But it also has to be apropos of the music. It sure. has to go along with what's there. It can't just be its own thing. You can't just jump in on a gig and just start playing your own thing.
Now, that's an old school thought, but it's the right thought is serve the song, right. serve yes. the music.
I would imagine it's easier to fill in for some bands than others.
And I will say it's easier to fill in on drums than most instruments. Right. But then again, maybe not for everybody.
So did you answer that question? How many instruments can you play?
Drums are my main instrument, right. and I sing. But I play enough bass to do some gigs because I've learned a bunch of tunes on it at this right. point. And I play piano. I taught myself a very bastardized piano where I knew enough to make a chord, you know, some sort of triad, whether it was major, minor, augmented, or diminished. And if I could do that enough to just be like, okay, I know that. And if this goes over here, then fine. You know,
he knows what he's doing. The woodshed songs are on the piano. He's playing.
Yeah,
the piano.
I get it. Yeah. He's not Billy Joel.
No.
Okay.
But I can play some chords to sing along with. Right. So that's
I dig it.
Yeah.
So I got, this is just a random question. Amanda came up with this question.
Yeah.
So talking about the fill in. If you could fill in for any band ever,
yeah,
who would it be?
Oh wow!
Like, I mean, any band,
yeah.
Like it was your dream gig. You just got a call and they were like, "We need a drummer."
Yeah, for sure.
Who's the band?
You know, it's funny because there's some gigs that that part of me would have loved to have played, but then again, I think if I sat in on it, it would have been something completely different.
Right.
And I don't want to do that to the band, you know. That's tough.
That's like me asking you your favorite movie.
Yeah, man, that's a tough
sure,
one.
It is tough. There's a band out there right now that I actually really love that, and I love their drummers playing as well, Rival Sons.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Miley is their drummer, and he's phenomenal, but they are a modern day sort of Zeppelin thing.
Oh yeah.
And, nice. And they are, as a band, continually pushing kind of away from that. Like they're trying to be heavy and hard rock and bluesy, but trying to find their own voice in it so that it doesn't sound as close to the thing. And that's one of those gigs that I love the band. I love Jay's voice. It's Jay Buchanan, one of these incredible rock vocalists that just exists in the world.
Huh,
just
nice.
From birth, just had a voice that was just like the angels are singing right now.
Right.
Oh, great.
What was the band?
Rival Sons.
Rival Sons.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite ones that are out there right now. And I guess just because I know their set list so well, that would be one that I would really love to go and just have a crack at just
nice.
Because it's fun. But I also love that gig. I love watching that band. Mike's playing is really incredible, and he plays these those new Pearls, but they're the classic series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he's got a 26 up there, and it's just beefy and sounds amazing.
I don't even think I could fit one in my car. I got that piece of shit silver Camry out there. If
you
I
just
got to
lay the seat down a little bit.
If I put a 26,
I thought that was a Buick.
It's a Camry. Don't do that to me, Ward Davis. You know me, baby. Jesus Christ, I'm going... Is it a Buick? I had a Buick.
Oh, right.
I had a Buick before.
Yeah.
It was silver.
Of course.
Ricky, we have a real interesting
past,
baby. Let me ask you this. What do you think about film?
I love film, man.
Okay, what's the first movie you saw in the theater, if you can remember?
Oh, wow.
And let me ask you real quick. What movie is it, and did it affect you? Or was it just like a... No, that was fun.
I'm trying to think. The earliest movie I remember, and no, it did not affect me much, but the earliest movie I remember seeing, I believe, was the first Power Rangers movie.
Ice.
When it came out.
Nice.
I believe that was the one with fucking ooze and all that shit.
That's pretty hardcore.
But I think that's like... 95, 96, something like that,
right.
You know? That has to be the earliest one that I remember going to a movie theater and seeing. I remember going with my mom to go see that movie, and that was one of those ones. But I do remember it. I guess I got really transfixed with that idea of going to a movie theater, like going to a place and seeing something on a big screen. I still love to do that.
Yeah,
I love going to a movie theater. It's one of my favorite fucking things, man. But going to see a movie, grabbing a bucket of popcorn, grabbing a soda, just sitting back and just doing the thing. That's there's nothing better.
Than good.
Yeah, you know? I love
so,
it. I love
that's
it.
Good stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's real good stuff. Well, I mean, I don't know. Like let me see.
Yeah, check out the questions. Let's make sure we didn't miss anything.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I will say we didn't talk about I'm in a new project called Scott Tournay and the Spark. And this was a this was part of the reason that I left Carrie's band as well. We had a couple of conflicts with some dates that were coming up, and I said, you know, it's probably just better that someone comes into the gig and is prepared for whatever's going to happen. But Scott was a guitar player for Grace Potter and the Nocturnals.
I love Grace Potter.
Yeah. We've seen her a good bit. Yeah, me and Amanda love Grace Potter.
Yeah, right. we saw her over the pandemic at the drive-in thing out in
I was there. I wish drive-in concerts were still a thing. that was really the coolest thing that came out of COVID. Yeah,
it was
you pull up your truck, you get that spot, and you get the spot next to you.
Yeah, empty. You could set up a little table.
You could
and
set
do
up a little party area, and the concert she played at. This was in Frederick, but the screen had her, so it was still a drive-in, but the band was just playing underneath.
Nice. Yeah.
It was really
so
fantastic.
You're in a band with
Scott. Yeah, Scott Tournay. So he was in Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. He left in 2014, I believe, and then went to do a couple of other different things. And then he was in a band called Electric Voodoo out in San Diego, which he's still a part of, but was out there for a long time. And now he lives here in Sparks, Maryland.
Nice. That's
and
amazing.
He called around to a keyboard player friend of his, Bronson Hoover, who is our keyboard player. And he said, I need to put a band together for my solo tour or my solo stuff that I'm going to do going forward. What do you know some guys? They called my bass player, Jeff Reed, and he called me after they had a rehearsal. And he said, do you want to come do this thing? And I said, yes, I would very much like to.
Yeah, man, that's a good one.
And it was really fun, man. We went up and played. I got Scott's record, you know, and we went up and just played through the tunes. And it's really fun. It's rock stuff. It's straightforward sort of rock fun stuff. And he's trying to put some dance elements into some of it. We're doing some of it's a little throwbacky, but some of it's trying to push forward into some stuff. And the first rehearsal we had, you know, fortunately Jeff is the bass player in my trio as well, so we play together a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's important.
Oh man, and that first rehearsal, we just laid into this first tune, and as soon as we were done, Scott was just like, yeah. Yeah, that'll work.
That's it.
This
nice.
Is the thing. And I was like, great, man. You know, and he's been so sweet and so wonderful. We did a couple of dates last year. We did the 8x10 a couple times last year, and we did a fly date in South Dakota, and we did a little Northeast tour in September. And now this year is shaping up to get us out on the road a little bit more too. So I'm just so thrilled about it, and I just want to make sure people know about the
gig
that's
great.
Happening, man,
so you have stuff really coming up though.
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually locally we'll be at the Hamilton April 5th coming up.
Who's we? You're the Scott Tournay.
Yeah,
okay.
Scott Tournay and the Spark. That's the name of the band. Yeah.
That's so funny. Sparks, Maryland. Sparks Park is one of my parks that
rad.
I take care of.
Oh, that's rad, man. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a crazy little area in there. Yeah. It's old school town.
There was another thing that I read with the Ricky Wise Trio that you're starting to guys are starting to do some original stuff.
Yeah. So we play every Monday at the Admiral's Cup together, and we play a couple of other gigs, you know, throughout the month or whatever. But when Jeff joined that band, he and I started talking about writing some stuff together pretty immediately. And Jamie and I had talked about it a few years ago, and I don't think the timing was really working out. So we just kind of pushed past it and didn't really worry about it. But I love working with him, so we just continued to do the Mondays. And once we started playing together as this trio, it started to find its own sound. And I went back to him and I said, look, man, I want you to be the guitar player for this thing because I love the way that you play. And I think that that's kind of sort of secret sauce in this thing right now is the fact that we're all playing together.
Right. And it feels right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And so I said, I think if we just got together in a room a couple of times, we could probably come up with some stuff. We haven't done that yet, but we're planning on it. But this year is the year that we're actually getting some stuff on the books to start doing that. And I have a couple more demos that are in the works. And in fact, I'm even doing some co-writing stuff with the Alcohols Girls right now. And hopefully, hopefully we'll get some stuff together this year. I mean, we're excited about what's coming together, but I won't put the cart before the horse too much. But but we are having some fun with that, and I'm really excited about what that can be. And so really, I'm looking to do many more creative projects in the coming years, but things that are fulfilling to my soul and things that are unique to some experience, whether it's to me or to the people that are involved or whatever. But I'm a little tired of the same old, same old.
Yeah, no, man. Good for you. And you're leading a charge of creativity down there. And
I'm hoping.
Yeah, it's good shit, man. It really is. Yeah. And the Alcohols Girls, you know, they're we're phenomenal. Trying to get them in here.
Yeah.
You know, I can't wait to talk to them. And
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get them in here.
Yeah,
they're great, just... man. Britt and Melissa are, they're wonderful. They're really smart individual human mm-hmm. beings as,
yeah.
as just people on this planet. But musicians... they just go above and beyond.
Yeah.
Their voices are incredible. I mean, Melissa's, both of their ability, but Melissa doing her operatic stuff as much mm-hmm. as she does is insane. And so is Brit's, you know, I mean, just the fact that these powerhouses sing together so often.
I know.
So
it's,
wild.
Yeah,
you
know? It's the last time we saw them was at the Auto Bar with Super City, and it was just so...
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to try to get good. Justin Krueger in here.
Yeah, Krueger's
good. Oh, yeah, Justin's JK. Great, man. Yeah. yeah.
Wonderful guy.
He's played the Woodshed
me.
Twice, actually.
Right. Yeah, right.
Pressing
right.
Strings and Alcohol.
Right,
yeah.
right. I was pressing
at both
strings.
Of those
we're trying
yeah.
to get them in here,
for
you
sure.
know, and stuff
yeah.
like that. But man, I'm so happy to finally meet you.
Me too,
and,
brother.
You know, now it's up to you. You know, we
have a mic'd up drum kit.
We do have a mic'd up drum kit,
oh, boy.
And. You know, like there's a lot of cool angles. I don't want to put any pressure on you. We can
hey,
cut
man,
it together.
I do all the editing.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. But no,
I love listening
to
you play, and I'm sure you like to play.
Yeah, we can kind
sure.
of like
play a
end
little,
the
yeah.
interview portion of it, and maybe
sure.
you can, you know, just
yeah.
mess around
on it for a minute.
Like.
Sure.
Yeah. What so. Is funny, though, he's got a Demon Drive Pearl pedal.
Oh, yeah.
But the beaters on it are the wood beaters.
Oh, yeah.
And man,
it's gonna
I said, man, these babies are gutsy.
Yeah, man.
I love them. But that being said, man, I really appreciate what you do. I appreciate
Thanks,
what
man.
You do for the city. I appreciate your playing. I think Thanks. You're a dynamite player. And in a perfect world, we'll start getting some heat, like shown on the city,
yeah.
you know, in a positive
I
light,
hope so,
and
man.
You'll be part of it.
Oh, thanks
I mean?
Very much, and I appreciate you guys for having me, man. I think
thanks for coming, man.
Any sort of positivity put back on the city is always beautiful,
yeah.
and what you guys are doing is a really cool thing, man.
That's
you
awesome,
know,
man.
So.
And tell
no,
your
it's
friends
awesome, man.
Oh, yes. that we're good interviews.
Absolutely.
yeah, yeah,
tell
yeah,
your
yeah,
friends
sure.
that it's a cool thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it was a great
that's the thing. It's like, if we can get, you know, people to care, then we can mutually grow. And
yeah, man, it's awesome. We've been thinking about this since, we've been kind of you've been working on it a while, but
right?
We've it's kind of evolved into a lot of different things, but now we've kind of
yeah, this is
settled on just getting just the music aspect of it.
Yeah,
but I'm into cosplaying and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm starting to
These
meet
masks
a lot.
Are incredible. Yeah.
I
have no idea. This is so insane.
Ricky, he sculpted Poe's dead
yeah,
body at the Poe
been down
House
to the Poe
in Edgar Allan
that's
Poe.
That's so wild.
At
oh,
the,
wow. He sculpted that statue
yeah.
right there.
Well, that's
the bust.
It was a 24-inch bust that
right.
that had 3D scanned
miniature.
And scaled down, but now I 3D print too.
Right.
So.
Wow.
But yeah, he sculpted Poe's dead body
but yeah,
and his wife.
The Edgar Allan Poe Festival, it happens in October
yeah.
on the anniversary of death. If you go this year, the death exhibit, which is it's called, will
sure.
be starting. It'll be on display at Carroll Mansion starting next month, starting in April, and you can go there and view Edgar's body in
That's
a funeral
so
setting.
Cool,
and I made the body, and 2 years ago, 2022 was the bicentennial of Virginia Poe, his wife's birth. So,
yeah.
The Poe House commissioned me to make her.
Wow.
So I made her, and they for two. two or three years they laid in state at Westminster Hall where they're both buried.
Whoa.
So that was wild. So we had a ball like yeah, a big dance, and
of course,
with the I have pictures with the bodies there, and I just sat because people didn't really know that I did it, so I just observed people looking at the bodies.
But he was on the fucking news with Marty.
I was with Marty twice.
He met
so good.
Listen, he met Zed from Pulp Fiction.
Sure,
Zed's dead.
That's wild. He met.
He got a picture of him. He was like, "Did you sculpt?"
The first year we did PoFest, he came to
Peter Green.
He came to the party that we had at the Carroll Mansion, and he gave me a nice compliment on the body, and kind of leaned back, and he was like,
so
I did
dude.
This movie. I was like, I know who you are.
Yeah, I love
it. It's amazing.
He's like, I did this movie with Jim Carrey called The Mask. You're like, yeah, I know The Mask. Dude.
Yeah, so it's my hobby, but it's fun.
It's coming around.
Well,
though,
it's man. An incredible but then fucking hobby. I thought it was your job. Jeez.
Yeah, he invented that Predator, like the
well,
Star
that's
Wars.
That's the Darth Maul Predator.
I'm saying you invented that, and the Ice Predator.
That's my Arctic good.
Predator. But then the Xenomorphs. I work with this dude out in London. He's a master sculptor, so he sculpted the Xenomorph, and I mold and cast him and produce him. And we're working on the Grid Alien next. Just some cool stuff. This dude's awesome. But I have a cosplay supply business that I've started too now. So I'm starting to go to cons and meet a lot of cosplayers, a lot of local cosplayers that make some cool shit.
Yeah.
Also,
absolutely.
Like the foam smithing is what it's called.
Foam smithing is insane.
Yeah. That's what he's saying.
Seeing
he's
some of that shit is
So my paint line is it's a flexible paint line designed specifically to adhere to foam and not crack. And
oh,
it's bendable.
Wow.
Like there's aerosol. It's so cool. Like
That's cool, man.
This is I've only been at it since September, but it's picking up. But I just went to AwesomeCon down in DC.
Nice. Yeah.
And met some local cosplayers that I've been wanting to meet for a while, but it's so fun. I love it.
That's
art that's my therapy.
Yeah,
art
for sure, man. I love that. And I would be remiss if we don't talk about Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem
because that's my jam, dude.
Dude. Such a fucking Muppet's head. I love this shit, man. I love the Muppets.
Oh, that's what we can go.
There we go.
We can jump back to that. In my top five movies of all time, the Muppet movie is in my top five.
Sure, absolutely.
It's one of the greatest of all time.
Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem might be my favorite band.
They're the greatest band of all time. They're the most underrated band. It's them and, Zappa. They're the most underrated band of all time. But, the Muppets, we've been together for a long time. And in 1992, we were pissed drunk looking at each other, crying, doing the Rainbow Connection.
Excellent.
You know what I'm saying?
This is the most amazing.
That's not a joke.
I love it.
And and in a serendipitous way, two or three or maybe a little bit longer, a couple years back, we took our sons to see the Muppet movie when it replayed.
Absolutely.
That was an AMC
Mills.
Or some shit like that.
I love it.
But yeah, man, I mean, I'm a Muppet maniac. Always have been.
My buddy and I went when the Jason Segel one came out.
Yeah, right.
We went to the midnight premiere because we were ready. We were just like, we need this.
And the musical, they did it old school
amazing,
style.
Was
incredible.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was incredible.
Some of my favorite gags are in that movie.
Man.
One time I waited a whole year for September.
Even the Muppet Show, we were saying that redone Muppet Show that they had, it was only about one season. And it was like in 2014 or 2015. It was one season.
That's like The Office.
It was like The Office.
It's incredible.
It was incredible.
It's one of my favorite.
Dude, I was so fucking...
Dude,
that
show was one of the funniest things I've watched in a long time. It's
because they were taking themselves seriously.
Yes.
Like, it was like if HR was like around... Bunsen Honeydew, he'd be shut down.
I'm gonna go revisit that.
Yeah, dude, it was incredible.
It's amazing.
I think it's on Disney.
I think it is.
I think
the Disney Plus thing.
Muppets is on there, but I think that it's one season.
You can blow through that a couple times.
It's just called The Muppets.
It's
incredible. It's so good.
And it got canceled. It had a great cameos. Like, it was just like the old school show,
But it was shot in like the style of The Office, where it was just like backstage at their night show.
Right.
Fucking.
Right.
That made me laugh so hard, man. Dude, I love that. Just
when it got canceled, I was devastated.
Absolutely,
because I thought the world was finally like gonna remember how incredible the Muppets are.
No, they didn't give a shit.
The mayhem.
They killed it for us.
I know, bastards. We're gonna bring it back if we can get Brian Henson on this bitch.
There we go. I can make puppets.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like maybe you'll. What we need is somebody to, you know, pass the thumbnail and see all this shit and be like, what the fuck is
yeah,
this?
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
just going to bring every, absolutely. I'm going to bring all my stuff. I have an animal.
Right.
Excellent.
Right.
I'm going to bring him.
Yeah, yes. That's why I said, that's why he's part of the show. I said, Woe Davis is a spectacle anyway, you know. So
in,
him.
In the next few months, the...
It's going to be a bigger, be a lot more shit. Just behind him. Right,
like, right, you're gonna, oh, my God. You're just going to see my face.
Ricky, we even got that. So there's a couple things, not to toot our own horns. We got that logo made. Local artist mm-hmm. made the logo.
Some friends of ours, Greg Jericho. Jericho nice. Vinegar Works.
We had a band, my cousin and me have a band called Gravedigger's Biscuits. We came in and
that's
did
a great
the,
name.
Isn't that incredible?
So good.
He got that from... The Office, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
Joel McHale, was he? Did he make an appearance on The Office?
Oh.
Joel McHale?
Maybe.
Maybe when they were looking for a new manager he after, said that, after that Steve Carell
I haven't seen him, but he got the name from Joel McHale saying,
Great they had biscuits. All kinds of random people come in. Like, man. Jim Carrey did a spot when they were
sure.
looking for a new boss. Like, yeah. And then Will Ferrell.
And
Will
they
Ferrell
were like,
was on
well,
The
Well, that's
Office
what I mean.
Will Ferrell
I think
was on The Office for a couple episodes.
Because they were like, well, what does Gravedigger's Biscuits mean? And he was like, it's English for coffee and tea.
I don't know if that's from
tea,
The Office, though.
Donuts and tea or something.
That might be Community.
It might have been, but I swear
yeah,
I thought
it doesn't sound familiar at all.
Maybe
so
it
we
was
Garrett rewatches The Office all the time.
Well, either way.
But it is great.
The Joel McHale, though.
The band Gravedigger's Biscuits recorded this theme song.
Oh, excellent.
So
yeah.
We're trying like local, you know, like local growth here.
Yeah.
You know, we're
man.
Trying to just bring a positive
everything's homegrown.
Spin.
Perfect.
Yep. Yeah.
That's
we're
what it should
good
be.
Shit.
I love it.
But we really appreciate you coming in. We're going to take a break and we'll just get you to, you know, just sauce it up for a few
fill
minutes.
Fill around for a minute.
Yeah,
sure.
See what we can get.
Absolutely.
Sweet. Good stuff.
Cool, y'all.
Sanity Lounge is brought to you by Polyprops. Polyprops US specializes in the production and distribution of materials used in the creation of props and costumes, particularly in the cosplay and entertainment industries. For more information, visit www.poly-propsus.com. Use code HEXFLEX10 for 10% off your first order.
Thanks for listening, Baltimore. You can find us at www.sanitylounge.com or on Instagram at sanity.lounge.
Keep listening and subscribe.
Stay sane, Baltimore.